Bobbig.
Welcome to our talk track A. Marco Elmrich is going to start us off today, and as he said, he has many things to tell us about a practical reason ML. I'm going to keep it short and just go ahead.
Thank you. Yeah. I work as a consultant for Concentric, and in our last project, we actually did some reason ML in practice. So I want to show you some of the experience and the findings we get from there. So, but first we will start with a hello world. And before we do that, I would like to know a little bit about you. So who of you would identify yourself as a functional programmer? That must be interesting. Okay, most of you, I expected this. hope for it, basically. So what languages do you do? Are there people doing Haskell, perhaps? Some. Okay, awesome. L? Okay, PureScript, maybe? Somebody doing TypeScript here? One, two, three person. Okay, this is the talk for you, basically. So I have something interesting for you, hopefully. Okay, let's start with the hello world. Everything starts with BS, and in retrospect, it wasn't the best abbreviation to use, but it stands for the BuckleScript compiler, and this is basically the heart of ReasonML. BuckleScript is a compiler that takes reason code or objective camel code and produces JavaScript, so you could also call it a transpiler. There's another variant of it called BSP Native, and BSP Native is able... Oh, I'm still muted. Do you hear me? Do I need a micro? Better with it? No? Same. Yes?
Fine. I hear you're fine.
Okay. So, maybe just I dropped the micro. You don't need it. Okay. BSP Native is a way so you can compile native binaries. So this is also an option, but it's not something I will speak about in this talk. So mostly I talk about transpiling to JavaScript because that's where I have my experience, which we use in our current project. So the BuckleScript compiler is built by Bloomberg, which is a big financial company, so there is really some support behind it. This is a way to initialize your first project. If you want to go to the JavaScript platform, you need to have Node first, and then you can use npm to install the BS platform, and then you can have a simple project. Let's just give you an example how this works. I just have a live coding directory here. This is empty, as you see, and now I initialize a new recent project. There are various templates for that. You could have a recent React project, or you can initialize it with different starting projects. But what I want to show you now is just basic reason. So it just initializes a sample directory, and I can open IDE here. And you see everything is already prepared. You have a project which you can use, which you can start coding, and you even get an Hello World example file. And maybe you've noticed, as soon as I clicked it, the JavaScript file was created. The compiler is installed here as a plugin for Visual Studio Code, but that's just one way to do it. You can do it, can start it directly if you like. And whenever I do something in the reason file, the JavaScript code gets generated. So I can, let's put this to the side. What I'd like to show you is how fast, how performant the transpiler actually is. I think this is one of the big benefits of the toolchain. It's incredibly fast. Let's say I change something over here, and as soon as I save, oh, I have autosave, hang on, it's already done.
It's so fast.
I can type, and oh, it's so fast because I have the wrong file open.
Yeah.
So, okay, but it's still fast if I have the right file open, so you see it doesn't work. Okay, that's interesting demo. What did I have done wrong? Let's do it differently. I start...
Because maybe you edited the JavaScript file by hand. And
let's just do an npm start so the compiler runs in the background. Normally the plugin does the same thing, but I can do it with the actual compiler and make an example here. Awesome, it doesn't work. Okay, that's like great way to demo it. Let me delete it. Save it again. Normally it works. Okay. Have to believe me, something went wrong. I have no idea. That is really crazy. Okay, there it is. Okay, let's try it again. Okay. Yeah, it's the risk of live coding. Okay. And exactly now. As soon as I save it, you see it works. Okay. This is basically the hello world, what you already can see here, that it uses the JS JavaScript namespace. So everything that's available in JavaScript you can get from the JavaScript namespace. So all the standard libraries are there. Not all of them, but most of them. Okay. So let's get back to the talk. So this was the demo. I have an interesting quiz for you. So I show you two generated code listings now, and you have to think about which of this was created by the machine, by the Reason compiler, and which of it was created by human. What would you say? Maybe the first one was written by human, or written by the compiler, or maybe the second one was written by human or by the compiler. So who would think the first one was written by a compiler, by the BucketScript compiler? Okay, awesome. Who of you think the second one was written by the BucketScript compiler? Oh, those are people. You're all right. Both examples were written by the BucketScript compiler. So the basic idea is that BucketScript generates idiomatic JavaScript. So if you are in a project and you delete all the ReasonML files, you can still work with the JavaScript files. So that's a trick to get it easier into the project. So you can tell your manager, oh, we do in JavaScript. We're just using ReasonML as a front end for writing our JavaScript code. Okay, so what's the reason behind Reason? Why we are doing this? Why is this a great language? Why do we think this is interesting to look into it? So actually, I really like TypeScript. I have done several projects with TypeScript before that. And while I like TypeScript a lot, sometimes there is time pressure in the projects, you have tight deadlines, and what could happen? Sometimes you need to have complex types somewhere, and suddenly the enemies of the type system, like any or even tsignore, might become your best friends. I have seen code where any is like basically everywhere. You call it legacy TypeScript, of course, or you can also call it any script. This is like the worst of both worlds. So if you take a look, and this is basically the experience from my last projects, where to place the different transpiler languages, you have basically two interesting scales. One is, how good is the language in doing purity enforcement, like everything needs to be immutable, you don't want to have side effects, stuff like that. And also, how well is the type coverage? Is the type system really helping you? And on the other hand, you have JavaScript interoperability. How well does your language interact with the JavaScript ecosystem? And basically, these two things are opposing each other. So, you know what this is? This is Elm. The idea of Elm, I like Elm a lot. I have to say, I like Elm a lot, so don't get me wrong. What Elm does is, Elm wants to stay in this pure world where everything is really, really strict and you have a great type system and you have a hard time writing bad code, actually. So in order to do this, this is the way Elm has to treat JavaScript. It has to put this biohazard suit on, and you have a really hard time to interact with the JavaScript ecosystem. It makes it really hard to do something bad, but it also makes it really hard to integrate with other libraries in the JavaScript ecosystem. And this is something we really need often. We need to have UI libraries for our React code. We need to have some business logic libraries. So that's depending on your project. And while I love Elm, you have to look where is it placed in this scale of the different principal languages. So Elm is on the upper right end. It is really, really good, really, really awesome by preventing side effects. In Elm, all the effects are done outside of your code. It's shipped as an effect to the runtime. It is really good in type coverage. It has awesome error messages even. But interoperability with the JavaScript ecosystem is pretty, pretty hard. On the other hand, you have JavaScript. There's no type coverage at all. There's no purity enforcement at all. But with JavaScript, you can imagine it's pretty easy to interrupt with the JavaScript ecosystem. So if you go one step ahead, you go to TypeScript. The scales are not the same, actually. If you go to TypeScript, you still have almost the same interoperability with JavaScript. You don't lose a lot, but you already gain a lot because now you have type coverage. Now you have, not really purity enforcement, but a little bit in this direction. So, and now this is the place where ReasonML comes in, because ReasonML sits in the spot between these two extremes. So with ReasonML, you have still a good integration with the JavaScript ecosystem and some purity enforcement, but not as much as with Elm or other more more strict languages. So as always, choose the best tool for the job. It depends a lot on the project you're doing. So the question you could ask is, do I need a lot of crazy JavaScript libraries? If I do, you might just stick with JavaScript or maybe think about TypeScript. If you don't have no need for JavaScript libraries at all, you can use Elm, which is really awesome. And everything else that's somewhere in between, I think ReasonML is a really great fit. So that's basically why I like to use Reason, because we have this kind of project that sits in between these extremes. And Reason fulfills three of my wishes I have for a front-end programming language, basically. And the first one, I want to benefit the functional programming, like most of you do. And while I like PureScript, Elm, and Haskell, it has some issues. First one is you have to convince your colleagues on your team. That's not so easy if you don't work with only, if you're not working with just people who have a lot of functional programming experience. So the learning curve is pretty high, I would argue. Maybe you think different. And there's the curse of the monad. Who knows the curse of the monad? The curse of the monad basically says, if you really get what a monad is, you lose the ability to explain it to someone else. I'm not sure if this is true, but it tells you something about the learning curve. And if you really want to make your non-functional programming friends to run away screaming as fast as they can, show them pseudohistomorphic prepomorphisms. This will work. So what we want to achieve with ReasonML is we want to have a functional programming language with an easier introduction, with an easier learning experience. I think, Justin, you called it a gateway drug yesterday, right? That could be a good word for it. Okay. So that's also one of the goals, I think. My second wish is that I want to have a very, 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 very awesome type system. I want to show you a little bit more about this soon. And the third wish is, sometimes I just need to shovel shit. What do I mean by this? Sometimes you just have to ship your code. You have to get something running. You write code, you may be not so proud of it, but it does the job. And I want to have a language which allows me to do this. And Reason has some option for that. So Reason makes these wishes become true. But before we go into the details, I want to tell you a little bit about the history. This is Jordan Walker. You might have heard of Jordan Walker because he's the inventor of the React.js framework. And actually, the first version of React.js was written in standard ML. So he later on converted it to JavaScript. And you have to know, at Facebook, they have a lot of Objective-Camel using it for their back-end tooling, using it for their internal tooling. Somebody knows the Flow tool, which is also a type checker. This is also written Objective Camel. And what Jordan did was he said, hey, why don't we just use Objective Camel also on the front end? That might be a good idea. And he tried it and he showed it to some of his colleagues, and the reactions were more like, what is this? I don't get this. This looks almost completely alien to me. This looks like, I don't know, psychohistomorphic brickomorphisms in the Klingon translation. I can't read this. So the takeaway was syntax actually matters. Syntax is important. When you learn a new language and you have something familiar, it's much easier for you to get into it. So what they basically did for Reason was they used Objective Camel, but built a JavaScript-like syntax on top of it. So it is still Objective Camel. So actually, ReasonML is Objective Camel. It's the same language. It's the same semantics. But they built a different syntax on top of it to make it a little bit easier for web developers to learn it. That was the basic idea. So there's some statistics. We have now about 120 contributors, a lot of stars on GitHub, some big companies contribute. And that's just pretty interesting. Objective Camel is a pretty old language. It's from the 90s. And I would say it's really battle-tested. So it's a language. It's not like it has experimental features every new day. It's really pretty stable. So they changed the syntax a little bit with ReasonML. But if you use it now, there's not a big risk that something will break in the future. So there are also a lot of books about it. Not a lot, but at least there are books about it, which I think is a great start for a new language. And there are already a lot of companies adapting it. We are over there. So Reason is production ready. It's not a question, can you use it in production? A lot of companies already do it. So there shouldn't be anything holding you back. So let's talk a little bit about the functional programming aspect of Reason. I brought you a small example. This is an exercise called the string calculator cutter, which is just you have a comma-separated string of numbers, and you just want to add it up. There's another requirement. You don't want to use numbers bigger than 1,000. So something like this. So how can you implement this in Reason? First, you write the different steps as functions. You can say, OK, I have a function called split by comma, which just splits the string by comma. And what's interesting here, this method, the split method, is freed from JavaScript. Now you get it as a pure function you can use in Reason. And all of this is in the JavaScript namespace. Now you want to map the various strings with the numbers to actual numbers, to integers. So we can just list map int of string. Then we want to filter the ones that are smaller than 1,000. And finally, we want to add them up. So who of you is not familiar with Fold? Everybody knows Fold? OK. This is a functional programming language conference. Everybody should know this. What I find pretty interesting, almost like in Haskell, you could use the plus operator as a function there. You can just use operators as functions wherever you want. So you fold over plus, and that's the sum operation, that's just it. So we can even improve on that because ReasonML is auto-carried, like other function languages as well. So we can do it in a point-free style. We just drop the last argument. Now, you see, you don't have to define a function anymore. This is the function-defining syntax. Could look at it like a lambda, but it's the same you do in JavaScript. So now we don't need it anymore. Just because the functions are carried, we can just drop the last parameter, and we get a new function which we can assign. So now we want to compose them. And composing them could be done this way, but yeah, that's something maybe we don't like. So we want to build pipelines. And for this, we have the pipeline operator in Reason. Somebody does F-sharp, maybe? Yeah? This is stolen from F-sharp, actually. So the pipeline operator appeared there first. So we use this in Reason, and now we compose the functions, and that's it. This is the kind of of code I like to read. Okay, you can even go one step further and build a point-free version of it, but that's not in the basic language. It's actually a library I'm using here. It's called Rational, and Rational provides some operators, and this is the point-free pipe operator. So you just put another dash over there, and then you can have a point-free version of it. Okay, next thing is the awesome type system. So you always have this feeling there's a war of types going on. On one hand, you have the static type systems. On the other hand, you have more dynamic languages. And which one is better? I think this picture explains it pretty well. The one doing dynamic typing is almost done much earlier than the one with static typing. But if you take a closer look at the puzzle he built, some of the pieces might not fit so well. So I used to do it like in the JavaScript community. I would say, don't make a war of it. Make let not war. Type systems have benefits, but so also have costs. So you have both sides of it. Costs are noise, maintenance, complexity. If you have too much type annotations, it sometimes buries your code a little bit. But there are a lot of benefits also. Of course, we want to have type safety. That's what we are in for. Types can act as documentation. They give you some convenience in your IDE. And this is also something the BucketScript compiler does. It can have some optimizations because it knows the types pretty well. So what can we do? We try to improve the ratio. For a good type system, we want to have more of the benefits and less of the costs. So how can we do this? First thing, what we should do, we should have type inference. I mean, type inference is one of the biggest selling points of a type system, of a good type system. And I can show you how this works in ReasonML. So let's start with a pretty basic example over here. Okay, so if you write a function and it recognizes what is done over there, this is the concatenation operator for strings. So the compiler already knows the function needs to be going from string to string. And this actually, what you see over there, the type annotations, you don't have to write them yourselves. They are annotated by the IDE. As soon as you change something over here, let's say I would have done something like 3 plus name. Now it knows it must be a function going from int to int. It does this in real time. You always have your type annotations. You don't need to write it yourself. If you really want to, you can, of course. You can say, okay, but name needs to be a string. And now you get an error because this doesn't fit. So let's do it like this again. So, and we can get rid of the annotations over there because, and another problem, it shouldn't actually actualize it should update the type signature, which it currently doesn't does. It normally does. I don't know. Tooling is still early. So, but we get a type error over there because Alice is an integer, so of course we should get an error over there. Now we got it. It goes from string to string. Okay, it becomes a little bit more interesting if you do records. Let's say you define a type person, and person have a name and an age. As soon as you have some other structure having a name and an age, it recognizes that someone must be a person because of the properties. Now we get an error because there's no type matching. So if I have something else, let's say I have something, let's call it, animal, and we have sound, and this is a string. As soon as I change this, sound. As soon as I change this, it recognizes that this must be an animal. So it always tracks the type of all your records. You don't need to annotate this. You can also have generics. If you have like the identity function and it goes from A to A, it must be some A, which is a generic type. If you don't want to have this, you can annotate it. And yeah, let's get rid of errors or the updates, hopefully. And now he knows it goes from into it. So it has really good type inference. It's also helps you to find errors pretty early in your coding process. Okay. Another thing is structural typing, but we don't have the time to go into this. So what else can we do? We can use tag types. For the Haskell people, that's basically type constructors. Which means, let me give you an example. Let's say you have a function just calculating speed, and everything is just a float. So you have a way, you have the time, you want to calculate the speed for going to the next room. There's something wrong over here. What's wrong here? Sorry?
Parameter orders.
Parameter orders, exactly. The duration to the next room should be the second parameter. So they are swapped. But there's nothing the type system telling you that this happened because it just float. So what we want to do, one first try could be that we could use type aliases. We could just say, okay, don't call them float. Call them sex and meter, for seconds and meter. This doesn't help a lot. The problem is still over there. It's a little bit better because now we have documentation with the types. We now see, okay, this shouldn't be meter, and this shouldn't be seconds, not just floats. But the type system still doesn't get it. There's something wrong. So what we can do now is we can use the tag types. So we say type seconds actually is sex of float and meter is meter of float, which is like the type is now tagged. We now know what the meaning of this type is, but it's like a normal type constructor you might know from other programming languages. And now you find the error because now it expects, I can show you the error message over there. Now it says, okay, this expression has type seconds, but an expression was expected of type meter. That's the kind of error message I want yet. I want to see what's actually wrong there.
Can you show the JavaScript for that?
Yeah, sure. In JavaScript, the types are gone. For performance reasons, they just use basic types as much as they could. But still, you get some comments, so you still need if you need to know where this comes from. So you have the documentation still in the JavaScript code. Yeah? Another question.
I see there's always this no side effect comment underneath there where beforehand it was this module is not pure. That's also generated, right?
Yeah, it is generated. So this is information you could use if you look at the JavaScript code. Yeah, that's interesting. Okay. Another thing you might notice, there's some structuring done over there. That's just the way you might know it from other function programming languages. Okay, now let's go one step further. You have type variants, union types, or sometimes, or however you call it. You could say we have a different type, which is called distance. And distance could be either in meter or in kilometer. And then later on, you could just pattern match on that. This is nothing new for people used to functional programming languages, but it's pretty new to people coming from JavaScript or TypeScript. So this is a really big advantage if you use this for reducers in React or Redux. So we get a much more compact syntax writing your reducers, writing your state management. I think this is pretty awesome. Okay. You know the $1 billion mistake? What is it? It's null. Tony Hoare actually apologized for this about 40 years later. And how does Reason handle this? Reason have no null. This was one of the most important things for Reason, to not keep all the Java legacy stuff. That's different from TypeScript. TypeScript has this this constraint. It needs to be 100% compatible with JavaScript. So it needs to import stuff like null and undefined. I don't think TypeScript is a bad language. I think it's an awesome language. They did a really, really good job to make it possible, but they have these constraints to be compatible with JavaScript. So ReasonML doesn't have this constraint. So they just dropped null, and now we have none. It's much better, right? Now, it actually is, because none is from an option, or a maybe. You might know it as a maybe. So if you would write it yourself, this is in the standard library, but if you would write it yourself, you could say an option, this is a generic type, is either none or some, whatever your generic type is. So you could just use option. And yeah, if it's time for another example, I think we have. Let me show you an example for this. It's here. So let's say, for example, you have a function called reciprocal, which just calculates 1 divided by something. You could check first if the divider is 0, and if it is, you just return none. Okay. Now the issue is, if I have a function like cube, it can't use results from reciprocal, because reciprocal returns not a float, but an option of float. So to work with cube have to accept an option of float. So one way to do it would be to write it in a way that it does a switch and does pattern matching before and looks if it is some x or if it is none, and then you can decide how to handle this. But this is something you usually don't want to do yourself, because it's a lot of work, it clogs up your code. So what we can do is we just map over it. We can just map over the option. So these map functions are specific. It's not like a generic map function in ReasonML. Every module has its own map function. There's list map and array map, and there is also option map. And you can just use the normal map, or you could use map with default and say, okay, if I got the none from cube, and this is the original cube, you could just use a cube which is not aware that there are options. And if you do this, you can insert a default value, and whenever it returns none, you get a default value. So this is a pretty easy way to handle this. But like I said, this is nothing new if you're used to functional programming languages, but for people coming from a JavaScript background, this is a huge, huge win. Okay. So the reason types can be inferred. Coverage is always 100%. This is also a big advantage in comparison to TypeScript. In TypeScript, we sometimes use the coverage checker, which tells you, oh, how much type coverage do we have, or do we have just any script over here? So we want to have a high type coverage. In ReasonML, it's not a question. Type coverage is always 100%, with one exception. I will come to that. And the type system is called completely sound. That's an academic term for it's a safe type system. Oh, actually, there's a Hindley-Milner algorithm behind it. You may know of this. Okay, IDE support is really good. There's a language server which you can use in different IDEs, so you basically get almost the same support in different IDEs. And now we come to the last point, where sometimes, I don't do this just for fun. I do real projects with it, and sometimes we have just to ship it. And so what do I mean with shoveling shit? What I mean is sometimes you need to integrate with crazy JavaScript libraries, and sometimes you even need mutability for this. Sometimes it's a question of performance, and you write bad code just because it needs to be faster in this case. So how does the JavaScript interoperability looks like? So one possibility is, at any time in your recent code, you can just open the bucket script text I want to say. Every time in your code, you can just say, I open bucket script.raw and just put basic JavaScript over there. And the compiler just takes it and puts it in the right place, and it works. So this is something you don't want to do usually, but it's there. It's possible. And if you do this, you better type it, because if you don't type it, that's the one way you can have loops in your ReasonML type system, or gaps in your ReasonML type system. So, yeah?
So the compiler believes the type. You say it's a string, it believes.
If you put something wrong in there, some really crazy stuff can happen, yeah.
But it's like unsafe. You say like believe me here.
Yeah, that's true. And this is something you need to be really careful. Mm-hmm. If you have interoperability with direct row JavaScript code, you need to make sure that the types are correct. Yeah.
This is modulo. So the next release of the BuckleScript compiler toolchain is going to have integration with the Facebook JavaScript infer engine, where they actually do some analysis of the JavaScript in the
problem. Wow.
So some of this annotating your Roblox is probably going to go away in the near future.
Awesome. Didn't know this. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Does that also introduce runtime type checks or not? Because if it doesn't, then it doesn't seem like it's sound.
Not in this case, no.
Because you could have something that's like a string.
No, this is just for the compiler. This is just for the compiler. You can have runtime type checks if you like, but you have to do it differently. Yeah, that's a way you can import a whole function. You have the function signature over there. Just another, give you another example. This is actually some piece of code I use from our current project. We do Reason React. And as you can see, there's not just the row annotation. There are a lot of different annotations for that. So you can say, I have a module. And this is a BuckleScript module, so this basically is a JSX file where we decided for reasons, whatever. We decided that we want to do it in plain JavaScript. And all we need to do to import this file is to have this declaration where we say we have this module, it's a React component, and it has this external make function, which is basically for creating React components. And these are keyword parameters, but later on they get used as React properties. So that's a pretty easy way, so you could just reuse your existing JSX components or build new stuff in JSX. If not everybody is on board, you have with ReasonML, that's a possibility. Okay, this is Redex. Redex is the a page where you can see what are all the libraries you can get specifically for ReasonML. There are a lot of bindings already available by the community, not as much as in TypeScript, but it's a little bit like definitely typed in TypeScript. So you get a lot of bindings for existing libraries. And I mean, the most important ones are there, I would say. There's like libraries for JSON handling, libraries for doing AJAX requests and stuff like that. There's a lot of stuff over there. I'm basically happy by what you can get over there. Then there are some escape hatches. I mean, purity is a nice thing, right? But the reason purity looks more like this. So sometimes you just need to get stuff done. And Reason is immutable by default. It prefers not to use exceptions, not to have runtime errors. It prefers to use compile errors. But if you really need this, you can have mutation. This is called references, actually. Somebody, if you did React, maybe? No? So if you did React, you might recognize this because the React references was built after this model from Objective Camel originally. So you can have mutation if you really need it. I try to avoid it in our projects. If you need exceptions, you can have them. They are there. You can raise your own exceptions. You can catch exceptions thrown by a JavaScript framework or JavaScript library. If you need it, it's there. It's just not encouraged to do it. And there are even loops in there. I have no idea what you need them for. Other advantages are the compiled code is pretty performant. It's like you are writing pretty fast JavaScript code yourself. It has some great optimizations. The speed of the compiler itself is really, really fast. I think they claimed at the beginning is like 10 times as fast as TypeScript. I'm not sure if it's still true. TypeScript improved a lot. But it's like you never realize that there's some waiting. You just write your code and it's instantly compiled. It's really awesome. There's great there's great tooling over there. You have tools like Reformat, which reformats your code. You have scaffolding tools like you see where you build projects with a theme. It's not like really major tooling, mature tooling. It's still in more like an early phase, I would say. But there are a lot of tools there, and they're pretty good already. And this is one of the biggest selling points, I would say. You can decide if you want to go more like to the Node JavaScript ecosystem, or even build native stuff and use the whole Objective Camel ecosystem, which is also pretty rich. There are other language features which I haven't shown you yet, like keyword parameters. I think there are a lot of interesting and great language features over there. But there are also some trade-offs. One trade-off is the impurity, of course. I mean, that's something I want to have. That is something that is there by design, because you have to shovel shit sometimes. But it is something to keep in mind. The documentation, I would say, it's pretty early. There's a plugin which you can have for your browser, and if you go to an Objective Camel page, it translates the Objective Camel source code to ReasonML. So you can use the Objective Camel documentation. But it's still something that is worked on. There's no async await yet. This is a problem for people coming from a JavaScript background and they want to have async await. There's no support for this yet. I think it will come in the future. And did I mention impurity? Okay, so for me, these basic three wishes have been fulfilled. I think Reason is a great language to use in practice. Later on, I will have a workshop with Reason React. So if you're interested to learn more how we build React projects with Reason, you can go to the workshop. I put some references in the slide, so you get the slides on the webpage later. You can look it up yourself. Yeah, the credits to the people provided the image, the nice images, of course, and that's about it. Thank you. Some time for
yes,
more questions.
Yes. Great, thank you.
Awesome, thank you.
A couple of questions.
We have this like structural typing thing where you have this person, that was a person because it had a name, an age, I think.
Mm-hmm.
What would happen if you have a second structure that has a name and an age? Would you have to...
you have to annotate it.
Yes.
If you don't annotate it, it just takes the last one,
okay,
which is maybe not what you want.
So it's not a compile error then.
No, it's not a compile error. Yeah, I think I would also have it to be a compile error.
Okay.
But in this case...
It takes the last that comes... Okay.
So this is called shadowing, actually. You have a lot of these shadowing things. You can also shadow bindings if you want. Okay. So you basically shadow the type binding for this. So it's more like a basic principle. But this is one of the points where you don't want to use depend on the type inference. You really need to annotate the code yourself. I mean, it's not a bad idea to have some types here and there to make it more clear.
I have a follow-up on that.
Okay.
Is there a constructor you can call when you want to make such a person record? Or is the only way to provide a map with the field names and the values?
Yes, to both questions. Like, what you normally do is you provide a make function. You don't need to have this because it just recognizes that the structure is there, but it's like a pattern. You usually provide a make function because you want to do some checks by building the new structure, it's a record in this case. And then you can have a different file basically forbidding to build the structure directly, so you have to go over the make function for this. So this is the way we normally do this. Other questions?
So you mentioned that in TypeScript people use an int too much, and so it's not that nice. But then you've shown that in ReasonML there are a lot of escape hatches. So my question is, okay, what's the difference in language feature, or is it a social difference in the way people write code?
I think the point of it is, if you do ReasonML, you want to stick as much in the ReasonML universe as you want, as you can. Importing or breaking the type system by importing JavaScript is something you do really rarely, because it has a much bigger pain You don't just easily just, now I just do raw JavaScript everywhere. With TypeScript, it's much easier to put an any somewhere. And also in TypeScript, sometimes the types can become really complex because you have this generic of generic of generic of something. And then it's really tempting just to put an any in there. And with reason, it basically never happened in our project. So I think in practice, it really is hard to break the type system. More questions?
So in closure, you have also two different uses. You have CloserScript and Closure for the JVM, and you have a way to write code such that your source code is compatible with both JVM and CloserScript. Is this a similar way in reasonable?
I have not tried this myself. But there's an example project on the ReasonML homepage where they built like a Mario clone, you know, Mario, that jump and run. And it uses OpenGL if you run it on Objective Camel, on the Objective Camel ecosystem, and build a native binary basically. But you can also run it as a web application, then it uses WebGL. And it's made from the same source code. I think this is pretty awesome. But I don't know how good the experience is. I mean, normally if you say, if I build something on Node.js, I use just Node.js libraries for that. I haven't tried importing Objective Camel libraries for that. I think it's not so easy. You can have some friction over there.
Great, thanks again. Marco's going to be around hosting a tutorial, and surely you are available for questions.
Of course, just ask me.
Great, thanks again.